everybody, I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
And this is the Best Album For podcast, a podcast where we talk about the best album for starting a bar fight. Caleb, have you ever started a bar fight?
I can't say that I've started one, Dave. I've ended many.
I can't tell from your face right now if you're being serious or not. Have you been in a fight?
No, I have not been in a bar fight. Of course not.
Have you ever
not.
Been in a fight, though? No. Like any kind of fist fight?
No, not really. You?
I have not. I've been on the brink in college. There were a few nights that got a little dicey.
College?
I've seen some friends get the snot kicked out of them. Big swollen eyes and all that stuff.
I saw that in high school. I didn't see any of that in college, but high school was definitely a lot of male anger being thrown around my dumb hometown.
College was a lot of alcohol. There's a lot of alcohol. Just like too much. Not necessarily by me. I mean, sometimes by me. But like the community I was a part of just drank a lot. And so things would happen.
There's some of that involved in high school too. What I love about the fact that we picked this topic is I was imagining you're at a bar and someone pisses you off. And you're going up and you're fronting. You're spitting your... God, I can't even talk like I've been in a bar fight. You're saying insulting things to the other person, and then you go, hold on, and you go over and you put the right music on, and then you come back.
I need this.
Yes. Hold on, I have to set the mood.
I have to admit that even in my imagination of starting a bar fight, I couldn't quite get to I'm the one initiating it. I had to start with like, okay, so something has happened. I've like rubbed somebody the wrong way. They have kind of motion towards this is going to happen. And I'm deciding whether I'm going to participate or not. Like fight or flight's kicking in. And if my album pick kicked in at that moment, it might tip me over the edge of, all right, let's engage. That was like the furthest I could actually get.
So you're saying,
I don't think I could imagine.
If you're on the edge and all of a sudden your pick for today comes on, you're like, that's my sign.
Not exactly. I think what I'm trying to say is, even in my imagination, I can't imagine what it would be like to start a bar fight. Except for, I've seen Patrick Swayze do it so many times that I know exactly what it would look like to start a bar fight.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're defending someone's honor. I don't know who it is, but, you know, it's got to be for noble causes.
Absolutely. Can that noble cause be somebody looked at you the wrong way, or does it have to be more noble than that?
No, it's got to be like somebody looked at, you know, the Dalai Lama the wrong way, or, you know, I don't know. There's got to be someone, someone in the bar with you. You're out getting a drink with His Holiness, and, you know, somebody knocks over his drink and starts saying Buddhism is stupid. And you're just like, hold on. Let me put this record on.
I was thinking about like what types of records could even possibly get me on the brink of that. And I was coming up a little short. Even like the most intense music that I listened to, I still felt like, I don't know if I have it in me. Like, I don't know if I can physically do this. I have friends who would probably, if not start, certainly never back down. And whenever we talk about that experience for them, I'm always like, they're speaking a foreign language. I don't understand the impulse to throw a punch.
Yeah, it's definitely an impulse thing. That's for sure. I think you and I are just pacifists. Our impulse is to try to diplomatically find a solution. We are the Switzerland.
Sometimes
people.
That solution is I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
Because this is uncomfortable.
That's right. And we're grown ass men now, and it's stupid to get in a bar fight.
Right. We have kids and wives.
Yes.
And what are we doing? Jobs that we need to not have black eyes for.
I feel like, I don't know about you, but I know we've talked a lot about being high school and college years and all that, but I always kind of felt like that, where I was like, what are we doing? You know, like that was always my perspective, where I was just like, what is this?
I think that I generally agree with you. I will say there were definitely times in college where somebody just wanted to fight, and we're just like kind of picking that fight all night long with various people. And there were only so many times. No. I'm saying around that. No. Ah. Not me. I'm saying like sitting in a bar for an evening and somebody is just like itching to fight. And so they're like just trying to pick a fight. You know what I mean? They're just kind of I don't know, taking up as much space as they can take up in the bar. It seems yeah. like in hopes that something will happen.
Right.
And there's only so many times you can be kind of accidentally shoved before you're like, come on, this is not okay. And yeah. at that point, my fight or flight kicks in and I choose flight because I am who I am. I am how God made me. But I can get it. I can kind of get, if you've had too much to drink, how your fight or flight kicks in the other way. And you're yeah. just like, okay, I'm done being shoved now.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. Again, I think it would take a lot to get me to that point, though.
Caleb, we have a very special episode coming up next week where our good friend Sydney is going to try to help us become Swifties. She's going to introduce us to the best album to become a Swiftie. And we've been doing some homework for that show where we've had to listen to a lot of Taylor Swift. What was your experience like this week going from Taylor Swift to music that you wanted to start a bar fight with?
Oh, see, I thought that you were trying to say, did that music make me want to fight someone? And if that is what you were asking, it's absolutely yes. And it was my own self for putting that in my headphones. It was a jarring experience. I would not say that all Taylor Swift music is not bar fight worthy. I could see being like, when someone comes over, knocks over the Dalai Lama's drink, you're like, hold on. And you go put Bad Blood on. You know?
So, but my question for you is, are you more likely to fight if a bad song comes on? If a song that you hate comes on? Let's say that you're in this situation, the Dalai Lama's drink has been knocked over, and then like Mbop comes on. I don't even know. Like, do you remember that song New Age Girl by Deadeye Dick? Do you remember the song?
I got
a new age girl. Tell us what she's like. Remember the song?
No. Why do I not remember that song?
One of the worst songs ever. And I know every lyric to it, which makes me so mad.
I was going to say, yeah, you could pull it up like right away.
I hadn't thought about that song in decades. And somebody mentioned it on like a forum the other day. And I was like, oh my gosh, I remember every word. And I hate that song so much. And I imagined if that song came on the stereo, would it actually make my blood boil enough that I could be tipped over to defend the Dalai Lama's honor more than even like the albums that I'm choosing today?
So your guy who's just sitting around at a bar looking to pick a fight, that might have been what happened. Maybe that song came on and now he's like, I just have to fight someone or something, you know,
for hours.
Yeah, for hours.
I really
come
hate
down
this Guster album that's been playing for the last hour, and now we must throw down.
So, listener, if this isn't clear, we have very little experience in this area. Why do we keep picking topics of which we have very little experience?
I think it's more fun that way. Yeah. I feel like we had a couple deep episodes in a row. And so I feel like we just need like some palate cleansers. We need to like kind
that's
of pull it
very
back.
True.
Just have some fun.
I mean, the things that we picked today are objectively the right answers to this question. So I mean, it doesn't really matter that we haven't had that much experience.
There is a part of me that has assumed that this music was made for this specific situation. Like, it's hard for me to believe when I put my album on that they aren't actually in a fight at the moment. Like, at the time they're recording, I think there might be a bar fight going on.
Oh, there's definitely been some bands that record like that, for sure.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah. One of the albums that I considered briefly was this band called McCluskey, who I really like.
Didn't they come out with a new song recently? I feel like they just came out with a new song.
So they actually just came out with four new songs, and they're up on their Bandcamp page. So it's actually a really sad story. The lead singer had tinnitus, and they had to cancel all their shows. And it's like apparently a really debilitating case that may or may not ever heal. And apparently now he has to wear these things on stage that are massive on his ears, just to be able to play safely and not further damage his ears. So they had to cancel a bunch of shows. They still wanted to pay all the people who are going to get paid. And they want to reschedule those shows now that he's able to play again, as long as he wears these crazy things on his ears. And he said that apparently visas to come to the U.S. and tour cost so much money. They're like so prohibitively expensive that they put these songs out on Bandcamp to essentially fund their visas so they could finish this tour and pay everybody who they had promised to pay as part of this tour. And for the fans who bought tickets, those tickets have been refunded at this point. I'm looking forward to buying my new one. I've never seen them. They're definitely a bucket list band. But yeah, apparently if you want to go support a really cool band getting their visas to come to the United States, check out McCluskey on Bandcamp.
Wow. That's a much deeper story than I was expecting, which totally ruined your punchline about why this made you think of McCluskey in the first place. What was the bar fight connection?
So McCluskey is this post-hardcore group that their lead singer, whose name is Andrew Faucus, has just made a career out of writing really irreverent, borderline silly, but have, you know, some meaning behind them lyrics that are super aggressive, and some of their song titles immediately make you think of being in a bar fight. So I'm just going to pull up my favorite album by them, is McCluskey Do Dallas, and I'm going to just read you a couple track names. I'm going to bleep this out for fun. Lightsaber King Blues, To Hell with Good Intentions, This Band,
Yes,
The World Loves Us and Is Our Anyway, when I listen to McCluskey, that music moves me to thrash around in my living room as I listen to it. And so I think that's just a little step away from throwing a punch. Like, anything where I'm like sort of willing to be in a mosh pit feels, and actually we can talk about that for a second. Mosh pits are definitely the closest that I've been to actually being in a fight. Have you spent time in mosh pits?
Yeah, not as much as you have. Definitely not as much as you have, but a little bit.
I mean, I certainly haven't since I was in my 20s. It's a young man's game for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
But there were definite nights where, you know, I found myself in a mosh pit and went home bruised. I don't think I was ever like some mosh pits are like famous for like people coming out like really
injured.
Injured. I don't know if I was ever in something that intense, but there was kind of a stretch there in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where it seemed like the way people had fun at concerts was trying to hurt somebody as much as they could without getting in trouble.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. A lot of aggression, a lot of, again, toxic masculinity coming out in those environments, I think. But it makes sense. I mean, McCluskey, Taylor Swift, things that make you feel violent. I get there's a common theme.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, you know, kind of like Rage Against the Machine type stuff where it's like they're angry, so now I'm angry. I just saw this band Death Grips at Riot Fest this weekend, who I've sort of listened to. There's like experimental rap group.
No.
Do you know Death Grips? They're this experimental rap group that is super hardcore. And live and in person, they just lost their minds on stage. Like their lead singer is screaming.
Way?
Oh yeah. Screaming every lyric, and their drummer is going so fast. The guy who's playing guitar for them right now is just shredding like crazy. And it was so intensely exciting. It was definitely my favorite moment from the entire festival the whole weekend. But as I was listening to it, I was like being drawn into that type of intensity. Like I imagine that if I was a little closer to that stage, it would have been a lot of fun to just thrash around. And that's probably the closest I've been. That's probably like mosh pits are the closest I've been to being in a proper a proper fight in my life.
Yeah. That also feels like a young man's game where it's like we want to avoid bar fights and also watch mosh pits from a distance.
That's right. Anything else you want to talk about before we jump into our picks?
I don't think so. I'm pretty excited to chat about both of our picks today. I think they're both super fun albums. I mean, maybe you can listen to them without getting violent. Like, you know, just like outside of a bar context, too.
I did many times this week listen to these without getting violent. So it's possible. Yeah. You can do it. Nah. Why don't you kick us off?
I chose the album from 1994, Smash by The Offspring. And I did not pick it, Dave, actually, for the title, which is very bar fighty. But I did pick it for the, like, I don't know, underlying angst and like kind of, I don't know if it's unearned confidence as much as it is like just stupidity that comes out from being like a young, dumb person. I feel like what we talked about in terms of a lot of bar fight energy is just about being young and dumb. And it's really hard for me to picture many bands that embody being young and dumb as much as The Offspring. I will say that like there are some songs on here that have in terms of lyricism, like a little bit more depth, like not the one where we talk about, you know, like how basically all the old people are killing the planet, but the young people are going to have to clean it all up. Still true, by the way. That's depressing. This was 94. That's still true. But, you know, Nitro Youth Energy just coming out of the gate, just this smash bang song that's talking about being young and, again, having all this crazy energy that I'm not going to waste this life, right? Like, I'm just going to go do what I want to do. And that theme just carries out through the whole album. I mean, Bad Habit is so much fun. Like, and the ones that people know the most from this album are going to be Come Out and Play. Which is, of course, about calling someone out and, like, getting in fights. So, very appropriate. But Self-Esteem is another one people would know very well. Probably some of the best known Offspring songs in general, those two, right?
Yeah, and Gotta Get Away as well. I think Gotta Get Away was another video on MTV that got a lot of play.
Yeah, this album was huge for them. Just to give it some context, like, this was definitely my entry point to the Offspring. So I think pretty young, like this and Ixnay and the Hombre, which we've talked a little bit about before, were the ones that really got me into the Offspring. But this was like right around when Green Day was getting a little bit more popular and like a lot more mainstream. So I think my read of it is that they kind of rode that like more mainstream punk wave, but not quite as mainstream. It's funny because it's like what I'm reading says, along with Green Day's Dookie, Smash was responsible for bringing punk rock into the mainstream. But I just see these as such different, like Dookie was just everywhere. Whereas Smash, I feel like you still was kind of like you had, and I don't want to say you had to look for it, but it had to be on specific channels. I don't remember seeing like a lot of music video, at least not as much as Dookie around this time. I don't know. Were your experience of Smash differently?
Well, it's interesting. I remember these bands being very tied together. And so like once Dookie hit, Offspring were either close behind or right before. And I remember hearing these songs just as much as each other. So like I have heard Longview and Self-Esteem the same amount of times. But I can tell you everything about the Longview video and everything about Basket Case video and the When I Come Around video. And I have no memory of the Self-Esteem or Cotton Play videos. So
that's what
were
I'm
they
saying.
Maybe they weren't being played on MTV? Like that seems weird though. Maybe I just like heard these songs and bought the album like so quickly that I just lived with it for a long time. These had to be big on MTV, right?
I don't know. That's what I mean, we are now just like opining on the history of an album just based on our own personal experience, which we admittedly do a lot. Let's just admit that.
We just usually make it sound like we know what we're talking about more.
Yeah, exactly. But like I remember, maybe it's because back then your experience of the music world was so driven by MTV.
Yeah.
At least mine was.
Yeah.
That maybe that's why Dookie felt like such a bigger album than Smash. I mean, I think I actually listened to and love Smash more. But I don't remember seeing Smash at all on MTV. In fact, the first time I even remember seeing The Offspring on MTV at all was way later into their album history. It was just
Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Yes, that fucking song. I hate that song.
I hate that song so much. It's actually when I jumped out. I was a little bit in until then, like, you know, at least I had one foot in. And Pretty Fly came out, and I was like, this, I mean, that song is, it's fun for what it is, but I was like, this is no longer the same band.
That's what it felt, that's exactly what I felt like it. It was like, Offspring, or Smash is like, Smash is a punk album, and Ixnay goes a little bit more to that pop punk, and then, what were they doing? Like, it just felt like, oh, now we've got to have some mainstream success. It just felt like they wrote something that they felt like would get bigger attention. And then that was the first time I remember actually seeing them on MTV. And I was like, oh, this band sucks now. All right, good to know.
I definitely remember lots of Ixnay on MTV. All I Want. Was that Ixnay and the Hombre? Yeah.
Yeah, it
was. What were the big songs on that one?
All I Want was definitely a big one. And Gone Away.
Oh, sure. Gone Away. Yeah. I remember the Gone Away video being played a lot on MTV. But yeah, I actually just pulled these two videos up, Cotton Play and Self-Esteem. And I guess I sort of remember them, but these were not played all the time. So that it's strange that Offspring got so seemingly so popular so quickly without that same crossover appeal, but it was everywhere. I felt like you couldn't escape the Offspring at a certain point in 1994, 1995. Like they were as big as any other band. Did it feel like
that's fascinating?
Did it feel like that to you in real time?
No, it didn't feel like that to me. And I don't know if it's because, again, it wasn't on MTV. I didn't have that many close friends listening to it, but it still felt very underground to me, which is a little weird to look back on and think about now. But anyway, we just spent like the first 10 minutes talking about what we didn't experience with this album. I will say, again, just a super fun, straightforward punk album that gets out a lot of youth indiscretion and youth energy. That is, it just, again, in terms of the idea of let's go out into the night and go to a bar and do something stupid, it's right there, right? And I will say, I think I told you this story where like one time I put on The Offspring and my dad was like, nope, I can't listen to that. I think it has a lot to do with the lead singer's voice.
Dexter Holland. He's very singular.
He has a very specific kind of voice, which when it works, it works. And if you like it, you like it. But much like Billy Corgan, like we've talked about recently, or other, you know, bands with really distinct voices, he is not for everybody. It reminds me, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, about why we love Smashing Pumpkins, some of these other singers with super, super distinct voices. And I actually think I remember reading this study that came out from the guy who started OKCupid. He wrote a book called Dataclism a few years back that was just looking at the data from dating sites. Like he got a bunch of OKCupid data and a bunch of other data from other websites. And he just like analyzed it and then basically told us what it meant about America. And half of it was super depressing. But anyway, one of his insights was that people with more traditional looks, where it's all like, you know, all the kind of mainstream things you would expect about being good looking, actually got fewer messages than people who kind of had one thing that was a little off about them. Just like I think of like Cindy Crawford's mole, you know, like something like that, that's like very distinct, or like had a different kind of look that put them not kind of mainstream, and they actually got more messages. I wonder if there's something like that, where it's like, if something feels a little distinct and not what you would expect, it has a little bit more appeal.
I certainly experienced that with like Pavement and Neutral Milk Hotel, like the indie bands from the 90s. The ones that felt like they lasted were the ones where the lead singer had a slightly off kilter voice, and the ones that were maybe very popular at the time, but they haven't really held up. Their singers have kind of a, you know, just a regular old voice. Yeah, that's fascinating. That's a really interesting insight.
Even other band, like on the more folk side, the ones we've talked about, like Counting Crows, think of Adam Duritz's voice, super distinctive. Think about like Frightened Rabbit. I mean, a lot of the bands we love, it's like they have super, super distinctive sounding lead singers. I don't know. I think there's something there.
So I feel like I missed pop punk. I had one of my best friends in high school was really into punk music or whatever. I always find it fascinating that people argue so much about the definitions of punk music and what is punk and what isn't punk. So whatever was happening in the 90s on like Epitaph Records and, you know, whatever was happening in the 90s with like NoFX and No Use for a Name and, you know, Less Than Jake and all these other Pennywise, all these other bands who were just kind of coming out of seemingly nowhere, and the Warped Tour was happening. That whole vibe that I feel like the Offspring kind of fell into, a lot of those bands to me sound very similar. Like I feel like I can't necessarily tell you, and I'm going to get torched for this by some of my friends and by some people who love music. I can't necessarily tell you the difference between like a Pennywise song and a NoFX song. I don't know that if you played them both, I'd say that's Pennywise, that's NoFX. I might be using the wrong examples here. Maybe one of those has a very distinct quality that I'm just forgetting about, right. But I'm kind of using those as placeholders. Anyway, my larger point is a lot of those bands sound the same. A lot of their singers sound the same. And the ones that seem to like maybe rise above that were the ones with really distinct voices, like, you know, Tom DeLonge, we were talking about that, you know, a couple of weeks ago with Blink 182, yeah. And you know, certainly Dexter Holland and Billy Joel Armstrong and, you know, whoever else. There's a bunch of them that broke through. But even like the guys from Rancid is like this, you know, historic institution at this point, and those guys can't sing at all. And I think it like makes the group what it is. Like their voices, them not being able to sing at all and still going for it, I think is a feature, not a bug of Rancid.
I mean, regardless, I do think that the distinct sound of Dexter Holland is a big reason why you recognize The Offspring, whether or not you like The Offspring. And I generally love this album, still have a lot of nostalgia for it. Yeah. Still love Ixnay and the Hombre. Those are my only two Offspring albums I really go back to.
Sure.
But this was a huge album for them. I love this quote from Dexter Holland back in 1994. When we recorded this album, our last one sold maybe 15,000 copies. So the possibility of us getting played on the radio or anything like that was pretty much non-existent. Isn't that fascinating? That like this was so ubiquitous. Label. And
yeah,
Smash was made with $20,000. Like it's...
Yeah.
It's wild, like what records like help bands break through.
I mean, they bankrolled their label to become a big label. Like they had, I read something. Was it The Offspring? I think it was The Offspring. I could be wrong about this. It was in the book that I referenced a while ago, A Sellout. That there was a point where I think it was The Offspring. There was like the whole office was filled with Smash. Like CDs, and then they had to also rent storage spaces that were filled with Smash CDs. People's cars, people's homes were like filled with Smash CDs because they couldn't, they were an independent record label, they couldn't keep up with the demand. They had no capacity to have like to store as much as they had to create, you know, in order to fulfill the demand for that record. And I think that's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah,
I just love stories like that in general. Yeah, I anyway, go out, start a fight, listen to Bad Habit and come out and play, and you'll know what you're supposed to be doing.
Do you have like, so you kind of came up in more of the punk scene than I did. Are there other bands, you know, around this time that you were really into? The kind of like, I remember Bad Religion. I had their Stranger Than Fiction CD and played the heck out of that one. And I always remember feeling like Bad Religion is better than The Offspring, but The Offspring have sold millions and millions of records. And I've never 100% been able to put my finger on, like, why did they break out and why didn't Bad Religion or another band like them? Like, what was it about, you know? Because The Offspring, they're a weird band. Like, I want to read you some of these lyrics. The lyrics on Bad Habit are, I guess at the time, probably not that controversial. Now it's like, this would not get made. So the gun in my, I'm really okay. The gun in my hand will tell you the same, but when I'm in my car, don't give me no crap. Cause the slightest thing and I just might snap. When I go driving, I stay in my lane, but getting cut off, it makes me insane. I open the glove box, reach inside. I'm going to wreck this effer's ride. I guess I got a bad habit of blowing away. Like, this song is about him essentially like road rage happening and him shooting someone. Like, is that what this song is about? This is like when you remember, like, realize that remember the Foster the People Pumped Up Kicks? That song, the lyrics are like all those kids with the pumped up kicks, better run, outrun my bullet. Like, oh, you're killing them. Like, this is,
oops.
These are lyrics that don't really, I don't know if they fly in 2023.
Well, I think that Offspring, I don't know what Foster the People is doing. The Offspring, I think, were trying to channel some of that Misfits vibe. I mean, like,
oh, interesting.
They got a skull on the front of Smash, you know, like a skeleton. They're kind of doing this kind of horror punk, but like horror punk light. You know, it's like if horror punk and pop punk had a baby, it would be The Offspring. And I don't, you know, the only reason why I think that they were the ones who popped, and it wasn't Bad Religion, it wasn't NoFX, it wasn't some of these other bands as much, is Dexter Holland's voice. Like, that's literally the only, I think that makes them so distinctive that some of these songs just sound quintessential, like, punk in the same way that Billy Joel Armstrong's song voice makes it sound quintessential punk. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Okay. I'm in on that. What do you think's given them staying power? Like, they still like are touring arenas, or maybe not arenas, but they're touring like big venues, and they've produced many, many albums. Like, what has given them staying power? Is it just nostalgia for come out and play?
I don't know. They haven't stayed with me.
Rude.
I mean, I think it's honestly, I think what gave them staying power is that they didn't like keep going down the pretty fly for a white guy, like trying
well,
to.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is that they.
But they did, right? Didn't they do? Why don't you get a job? Wasn't that on the one after Pretty Fly?
Wasn't that? I thought that was on the same album.
I don't think so. I might be wrong. Americana. But I don't think so. I think Why Don't You Get a Job is after that.
Hold on. We're gonna check this shit because Dave is calling me on my Offspring knowledge right now. Nope. Why Don't You Get a Job also on Americana?
Oh, so I'm cutting this whole thing.
Of course you are.
No, I'm not. I'll leave it.
I would say that just to clarify the record, I liked Offspring. I like Green Day. I like some punk bands when I was growing up, but I really didn't get into punk. I got into it more as an adult.
Oh, okay.
Got into it like what, 5-10 years ago?
Oh, that recently?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I kind of went back through the catalog, which was super fun to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. One last thought on the Offspring real quick, sticking on Bad Habit. Is there a more fun lyric to drive around and scream at the top of your lungs? And I'm going to bleep this again for effect. You stupid.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I meant to talk about that. Yeah. That's one of those where you're listening to it as a kid and you just like feel so cool saying it along with yes. it. You know, like they 100%. Made that for like teenagers to feel cool saying yep. it.
That's fun. I love that. My pick this week is a grandfather of the Offspring. It's Iggy yeah. and the Stooges' Raw Power. The Stooges' third record. So they put out two records as the Stooges. They broke up because everybody hated everybody else. And they got kicked off their label. And then several years later, they sort of reformed in a kind of super shitty way to be Iggy and the Stooges, where they shuffled around some members and didn't invite original founding members to join them until the people they did invite backed out. Then they did invite the founding members to come back, but told them they had to play different instruments. It's just a mess.
Oh, my God.
These guys were, you know, they're a bunch of kids from Ann Arbor, Michigan, who are listening to the Velvet Underground and being really frustrated with music in the 60s. Like they were not interested in any more of the music that we were talking about last week, you know, in the 60s and yeah. kind of set out to end it, to like put a nail in the coffin of that kind of like folksy Woodstocky music. And I've heard stories where bands who like played Woodstock would show up or like would let the Stooges come on as their like opening act in some other town. And these hippies would like come to the show and then the Stooges would be on stage like writhing around. Iggy Pop like used to cut himself on stage, which seems insane, but that's what he did. And, you know, they just like, they were belligerent and probably drunk and high. And apparently people would just, you know, boo them out of there and have no idea what they just saw. But the Stooges just made an effort to be as countercultural as possible. And they sold very few records. Nobody was into them. There were very few critics who were into them. And I don't totally understand how these things happen. But at some point, the Stooges caught the imagination of like 100 other people who went on to start their own bands, and suddenly the Stooges become an institution as sort of the prototype of what becomes punk music in the 80s with the Clash and the Ramones and other bands like that. So the Stooges so have three albums that are each worthy of being played while you're starting a bar fight. I picked Raw Power only because Gimme Danger is one of the like 10 greatest songs ever written. And when that little clinky piano comes in, that is the moment. That is the moment where I think I might, like, my like fight or flight might go the other direction. Like, if Gimme Danger comes on the stereo, it's like this low rumble of a song where it's kind of all like this seething, threatening, kind of aggressive quality to the music, but they don't necessarily let that out. Like, they, it's all kind of like riding right on the surface. And this song sounds like it's just ready to explode at any moment. By the end, it does finally explode and it feels like all hell is broken loose. And that's the moment in the song where he's like, hey! Where they, like, it feels like the band has now entered the crowd and started a fight right there in the bar that they're playing in. I really love this record. I've been listening to this record for, you know, the last 20 plus years, and every song on it and every song by the Stooges has that same quality of, like, kind of low-key threat, not even low-key, like just real threatening music all the time. Like, this stuff, I think now maybe it might sound a little more tame than it did, but I try to imagine it in the, like, setting of, like, Cat Stevens, and it suddenly, oh, you know, God. Or like Yellow Submarine or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, I get how this created a whole movement that, like, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, the Stooges had anything to do with, like, Led Zeppelin or, you know, the other bands that became huge in the 70s. But I do think that they played their part in, like, transitioning out of the 60s and into a more aggressive, more meaty and muscular
rock in a way music. That was pretty underground, where they were, like, influential in a way that no one saw coming.
For
Can
sure.
I read you this quote? I think you will love this quote from
yeah,
me.
Please.
Music critic Joe S. Harrington called this album a sledgehammer attack of brutal ill will.
Nice. Yes.
If that's not good for a bar fight, I don't know what is.
This is easily, and really, Iggy's songs after this, you know, I think about Lust for Life, you know, some of the other ones that he, you know, Real Cool Time or, you know, The Passenger, where they would serve fine in a bar fight, but there was some quality about the Stooges that felt more dangerous. And you know, when I think about, let me, you know, I Want to Be Your Dog. When the tambourine part comes in and I Want to Be Your Dog, like, I feel ready to, like, do something. I don't know what that is exactly, like what my version of a bar fight is. I guess drive a little faster. Or, like, you know, get my groceries a little harder. I don't really have, like, a good outlet for this pent up aggression and energy, but it's palpable. Like, it's hard for me to believe somebody could listen to this and not have their heart rate go up a little bit and just be a little bit more on edge. And I find that pleasurable. I can appreciate that other people might not find that pleasurable.
This is proto punk, right? Like,
yeah, this is, I mean, when, I think that's how it's understood.
Basically
now,
like the birth of punk. It's said that the Sex Pistols really covered them a lot. I mean, it feels like the Sex Pistols, the Clash, you know, some of these bands that were hugely influential to the hardcore punk movement
in the UK,
like, all owe it to, you know, Search and Destroy, I Want to Be Your Dog, like these songs that the Stooges really, like, perfected the sound, and especially the live shows. Like, the Sex Pistols being so kind of controversial in the UK and, like, so in your face, so counterculture, doesn't it feel like that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Iggy?
I feel that way, but it's interesting because I also would say Iggy doesn't happen without Lou Reed, or Iggy doesn't happen without Jim Morrison. You know, so it's like there's just a lineage, right? So it's cool that Iggy's a part of that. Like, Iggy's a big part of that. He kind of changed what a live show looked like. And not necessarily for the better. I don't know that a man going up on stage, showing everybody his genitals and cutting himself with shards of glass is the thing that I want when I go to a show.
That's fair. Was this happening around the same time as Ozzy Osbourne was getting, like, pretty famous for some insane things on stage? Like, what I'm trying to get at is, like, were the late 60s, early 70s just the time when you tried to kind of outshock people on stage? Like, we're just getting beyond the, like, musicality of it. Now it's just all performance, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 1970, first Black Sabbath album. They go on to inspire hundreds of bands as well. And you know, and I have no sense of if Iggy Pop and Ozzy Osbourne ever crossed paths or ever shared the same circles. I'm assuming once they were in New York, they must have. But yeah, it all feels like it's part of the same movement. I think it's interesting. I think there's this thing that happens in music history where similar things bubble up at the same time in different parts of countries. So the most obvious version of this is everything that was happening in Seattle in the early 90s and late 80s, you know, with Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and
yep.
Pearl Jam or Mother Love Bone and Nirvana. And at the same time, you know, there's bands like the Smashing Pumpkins in Chicago who are also reaching for something similar. It's not the same. We've kind of covered why it's different. But there are similarities in their sound and in some of the ways that they are approaching production, especially. And so it's interesting to me that throughout history, there's sort of these pockets of types of music that seem to bubble up in different cities, but at the same time, like multiple yeah. people were ready for this type of music to change. And it took some visionaries, yep. Tony Iommi and some of these other guitarists who were developing their sound, Jimmy Page, the guys in Pink Floyd, like this stuff was all kind of coming up at the same moment. And it all seems like in reaction to what came before, just like all the 90s stuff seemed like, you know, a reaction came before.
Yeah.
And it's like a reaction in the same direction. I think that's so fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. Because I feel like after that, like you have all of the people kind of building on what the kind of mainstream artists in the 60s do. And you get this whole underground and quickly not underground culture reacting against it.
Yeah.
And then from there, it just feels like a thousand flowers bloom in both, you know, all directions. Yeah. And we kind of have modern music the way it is. It's like the only kind of thing that feels kind of uniquely different and doesn't build on either of those is like the birth of hip hop. Right. Which is, you could argue, builds on a lot of things that came before, but is also unique in its own way. It is really cool to trace back the lineage and like think about what these things owe to each other and like be able to give them their equal due.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I feel like that happens less now. And I imagine the reason is that we've just become genreless.
100%.
They're just making music out of this pastiche of all these different influences that they've had. Whereas I feel like the Stooges are a reaction, but they are strong. They are so clearly inspired by Velvet Underground or the Doors or whoever else. You can kind of feel the lineage, and there's not a lot of like, I wouldn't expect a Stooges song that brought in like folk music as one of its pieces. And now it's just all bets are off. You can do whatever you want. You can do alt country for a few songs and then, you know, swing it around and have a weird hardcore EDM moment. And it's really bizarre. It's like kind of disorienting, and it makes it hard to predict where music is going next. And also I think makes it hard for new things to happen and for us to recognize them as a new thing happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's weird that we live in a genreless world, but also I kind of like it. Like I like when artists pull from lots of different quote unquote, like bucket, you know, like, these were all made up anyway. So I kind of like that it's blending together. I'm hoping that still we can create some distinct sounds that don't have to be like labeled any one thing.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page. I do miss sometimes, like I'm just in the mood. I guess this still exists, but I'm just in the mood for like a hard, like a very specific type of rock album. And there's just nobody yeah. making that type of rock album anymore. But that's not necessarily true. I think there are. You just have to search a little harder for them.
Yeah, that's true. I think if anything, that people still make that as a reaction against the genreless stuff, right? Like in terms of like trying to create a distinctly punk sound or a distinctly old school hip hop sound or whatever.
Anything else you want to say about Iggy Pop before we transition here?
What do you want to say about it? You're the one about to start a fight.
I don't really want to be in a fight. I think now that I'm in my 40s, I think that the time in my life where I'm curious about what that feels like is over. And
it's
I'm
too
not,
late, Dave.
I'm not very late. Interested in that. It's wild to me that there are people in their 40s who get into bar fights. Like that's a thing that happens probably every night of the year in multiple cities in America. And that's very strange. And I guess alcohol is the reason and probably other issues as well. But I'm now past the point where I'm interested in it. I will say when I was first listening to the Stooges, there was some part of me that's like, I wonder what it's like, because I bet these guys have gotten punched. Like, they sound like people who, like, you know, are just lanky and muscular and sinewy and probably have been in a fight or two. And it's hard for me to believe that you're making this music without having been in a fight or two. And I have no idea what that's like. So this is like another one of those doing peyote in the woods where I'm going to ask my friends, you know, is your fighting experience enhanced by the music that's playing in the background? Like, are you so tunnel visioned to that point that it doesn't really matter? Am I just assuming that it will, because in Roadhouse and whatever other movies where bar fights happen,
there's the soundtrack to movies. That's what ruins us.
That's right. It's always my imagination is formed by movies.
Yep.
And there's always music. There's always music in the background. So when I first heard these records, there was some part of me that was curious about what it would be like to go listen to Iggy Pop and get into a fight. And that's a weird quality, because there's not other music. It's not like I listened to Radiohead and thought, I wonder what it's like to be in a fight. Like, there's something about this music that brings that out in me.
No, Radiohead is when you've had way too much to drink. Like, you're at the other end. You're not hyped up anymore. Now you're sad and depressed, and somebody needs to just take you home. What do you think it is about, like, I guess, like, it's interesting that we picked, like, albums in the same lineage, I guess you would say, yeah, in terms of, like, proto-punk, true, and then clearly, like, pop-punk getting into, like, more mainstream. Mm. What do you think it is about punk that, like, we went to that? That was the genre we reached for this topic.
I think it's all id. Like, I think these bands, something I've learned about the punk scene is that the reason why I don't connect with it as well as other people is because I just didn't do concerts. Like, I just didn't have access to concerts when I was growing up. And by the time that I had access to concerts, I didn't have any money. And so I just never saw these bands live. And the reason why it all sounds kind of similar to me is because I don't have anything attached to it. Like, I haven't gone to the concerts and attached part of me to this experience. And everybody I know just, like, can't talk about punk music without talking about certain concerts that they remember. And it seems like it's a very communal thing. And it's a very, like, you know, you're part of a larger thing. And you hear about, like, you know, the Bleecker Street stories with Green Day, and where, like, these little punk bars, like, wouldn't let Green Day play there anymore after they sold out, quote unquote, and went to a major label. And so I think that punk music is all id. You know, it's music that's, like, really accessible to people who don't necessarily know how to play their instruments excellently. That's
that
the right
is
word.
Very fair, yes.
You know, and who and maybe for singers who aren't really reaching to be, like, you know, like Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins is attempting to be a huge rock star. And I don't get the same impression from punk band singers. They're very rarely looking to be a huge rock star. And it seems like there's just sort of this, like, balled up energy and aggression. You can just, like, play really fast. And that's a feature. Like, everybody's excited when you play really fast. And so this music all just feels like it comes from that same part of our brains that also control, do we want to get into a fight?
Yeah.
Like, I think about, like,
that makes a lot of sense.
When Fight Club came out and I started listening to the Pixies, who I'll talk about, you know, during honorable mentions a little bit, you know, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, this is just, it's just birthed out of that same part of your brain that is a little crazy the little crazy that like kind of pushes you over the edge into a little angry and whatever else. Does that make sense? Does that read to
you? Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's like, it's music for people who have no access to their emotions in real life.
Or too much access, as it would later happen with emo and
maybe
some of the other offshoots.
Yeah, maybe. But it does feel just like an outlet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
I mean, just to go into honorable mentions, I also was just thinking about, like, what is this as a genre? Because I almost immediately thought of it. I mean, obviously there's lots of options within it.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
I was thinking about metal in terms of, like, you know, do I go back to Master of Puppets with Metallica or back to Ozzy or something that's like, or even like something hardcore, like the kind of people, you know, that, like, don't even like, there isn't even words there. It's just, again, get a pure,
it's like guttural
anger or emotion, or at least feigning anger. I don't know. Those people can't be angry all the time. Like, is that the right thing? I don't know. I just, at the speed at which punk comes at you still felt like the right call.
Yeah. The speed. Speed is a big part of this. Because you have to make a 100%. Split second decision. Like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to engage. I'm not going to diffuse. And you know, if I'm listening to Metallica, there's just too long to decide.
The
buildup takes too long. And not too long for the music. Metallica is amazing. I'm just saying the buildup takes too, it gives me too much time to reconsider my actions.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like a slow burn and you need something that comes on like hot and heavy. Like, you're right. Before you have a chance to think about it.
One of my honorable mentions is the Pixies, and specifically it's the song Gouge Away. So it's off of Doolittle. It's the last track on that album. And the first time I heard it, I remember like something shifting in my bones, like where I was like, oh, this is really cool. I think I talked about this in the episode about driving by a group of youths. Like, yes. I think a song that it's really cool and also a little seedy or a little threatening. The Pixies have a number of those songs. They also have a number of songs that are like, do, 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 do. Like, and so it's hard for me to ever pick the Pixies as a bar fight band because I feel like you're in that moment and then suddenly like, you know, Here Comes Your Man comes on. It's like, well, I'm not going to fight during Here Comes Your Man.
I thought that same. So I thought about The Clash and I thought about it for the same reason. It's like for every London Calling, there's kind of like a dancey, almost like poppy song. I don't know. Yeah.
I thought about this indie rap group called Cannibal Ox and their record, The Cold Vein. There's a bunch of like little indie kind of experimental rap records that are pretty aggressive and pretty intense that I think could work well in a bar fight situation. You know, certainly stuff like Run the Jewels. I mentioned before Death Grips. Like there's some of these bands that I think would work pretty nicely. I think I remember listening to like Clips back in the day and thinking like, I'm a little, this is provoking. This music is provoking me. DMX a little bit.
This music is provoking me. I'll give one more honorable mention, and that is Rage Against the Machine. I mean, pretty much any Rage album could do. I mean, it literally has Rage in the title.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I might throw up Evil Empire. I might throw up self-titled. I mean,
come on, man.
Yeah, hard to go wrong.
It's Battle of Los Angeles.
Why is it Battle of Los Angeles?
Because it's the battle.
Because it's the battle.
I mean, first of all, it's because it's their best album. But also, I assume you disagree with that sentence, that it's their best album.
I was going to say, I think we might have to go to war on that one.
We might do, we should do like an episode sometime where we exchange records from the same artist and you like go to bat for your favorite and I go to bat for my favorite. Because I'll talk about Battle of Los Angeles any day of the week.
I mean, it's just hard. I mean, there's so much good stuff there. Hard to go wrong if you're looking for bar fight music with pretty much anything Rage.
Offspring Smash, does that go into your canon? Into the Caleb Gardner canon?
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely. I mean, I feel like I've listened to this album just for fun recently.
Okay.
I was like on a road trip or something and I was like looking through, you know, like what have I not listened to? And I was like, oh, Smash, yes. And I just put it in. It was just
nice.
I just love this album. It's so much fun.
I was on a treadmill, not recently. My most recent time that I listened to this album, I was on a treadmill and I was just really having a bad day. I was just dragging and I just needed something to get me to a new level where I could continue on this treadmill. And I thought of The Offspring and it worked very, very well.
There you go.
So yeah, not in my canon, but deeply love the record and have lots of memories of driving around blaring it out of
my Camry. I feel like The Stooges might work well for our like working out when you don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Right?
They're on my list then. Yep.
Bring some of that raw power to, you know, hitting the heavy bag or lifting some weights.
Oh, I should probably say, so I am going to put Raw Power into my canon. I probably would put the other two records in there as well. So there's a David Bowie mix of this record and an Iggy Pop mix. David Bowie produced this record. And all respect to David Bowie. I'm happy to bow down at the altar of David Bowie when called upon. I will genuflect in his direction. And also, this is not a good record. His version of it is not good. Like it just loses so much of what I think makes this record special. And so I would point you to the Iggy Pop production of Rod Power, and that's the one that you're going to find, I think, as the sort of default. But they both are out there recently because there was an anniversary release. So if you're trying to decide, pull up the Iggy Pop version.
Good clarification. What do you listen to this week?
So I'm still kind of working through all the stuff that came out in early September. There was such an avalanche of good music.
God, me too.
I kind of called my shot on Slow Dive, Everything is Alive, a few weeks ago, and then decided not to. And I could have. Turns out I could have, because that record lived up to all my expectations. It is another great entry into their catalog. Slow Dive for me, this will come up in some episode at some point, but Slow Dive for me is just the best music to put on in the background on a random Saturday morning. Or even sitting out by the fire. I love putting Slow Dive on, and this record is shoegazy in the best ways, bliss pop in the best ways. So really loving that. And then more kind of blast from the past stuff. Chemical Brothers came out with a new record called For That Beautiful Feeling. We talked about the Chemical Brothers on that episode you mentioned earlier, the Working Out or When You Don't Want To. You guys know that their record, Dig Your Own Hole, is one of my very favorite records. I haven't really loved, I've loved singles here or there from the Chemical Brothers in the intervening 20 years. But this new one, For That Beautiful Feeling, is front to back awesome and gets me going so quickly. Live Again and No Reason are just like, just like walls of good energy, and it'll make you want to do all the things EDM is supposed to make you want to do. And it just keeps going from there. It's just a beautiful record. It's warm and deep. And there's, stretches in the middle that go on a little too long, like all the best Chemical Brothers records do, and get a little too housey, a little too samey for a minute. And then they pull out of it and course correct. And it's awesome again. But it's just a really, really strong record. And a very surprising one, kind of this late in their career. I kind of gave them up for, this is a band that I will just look forward to a song here or there and hopefully catch them live at some point. But they put out another banger. Great record.
Nice.
How about you?
I'm going to surprise you, and I'm going to pull out another electronic album, actually. Ooh, that I've been listening to that I almost forgot about, but I've been putting this on while I've been working. This for me has been a good, like, put it on while in the background, while you need to get something done. And it is the new album Alchemy by Disclosure.
I didn't know Disclosure had a new album.
Yeah, I found it recently and put it on, just randomly for something to listen to while I was working. And like I said, it's fit the bill. And Disclosure is a hit or miss band for me. Hmm. They had an album back in 2015 called Caracal. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I really loved it because they featured a lot of artists on it that I enjoy. And I thought the partnership really worked. And then since then, every time I see them come out with something, I'll kind of put it on. And I'll be like, meh, it's fine. It's a little dance hall, a little too dancey for me.
Yeah.
I think this album moves more into the electronic than the dance. And I think that's why I like it more. But you should listen to it. I should be interested. You specifically, Dave, not listeners. Listeners, you can take it or leave it.
It's a good clarification.
Dave, I want to hear what you think about this, given your love for electronic music.
I loved their first record, Settle, back in 2013. And I've kind of lost track of them since then. So I'm looking forward to it.
Other than that, this has been similar to you. Like, I'm having a hard time keeping up. There's been so much good stuff. And I'm also, like, anticipating just so much stuff that's coming out. Mm. Did you know The National just randomly came out with a new album, like, yesterday? Like, very recently?
Yeah, second one this year.
Yeah, so I'm obviously going to give that a spin at some point. There's been, just to give a shout out to some really good things that have come out. I'm still looking to the new album from Glasser is coming out soon. There's going to be a new Crosses, which has come out with a couple of good singles. That's Chino Moreno's side project, lead singer of Deftones' side project. So there's just a lot of good stuff in the pipeline that I'm really looking forward to that has had some really good singles come out recently. Jamila Woods, every single from her new album I've really loved. So looking forward to that. There's some good like punk songs. Talking on the Internet by Spiritual Cramp. I'm looking forward to that Spiritual Cramp album.
I don't know that one. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, you should. It's good. Some good stuff. The Kills have had a few good singles. They're coming out with a new album. Anyway, lots of good stuff coming down the pipeline still that I'm like not even caught up on the like albums I want to listen to because so many good albums came out recently.
All right, man, we have had another successful foray into our imagination exercises of things that are never going to happen to the two of us. But we know exactly what it would be like because
things
we can imagine
we
the music.
Don't want to happen. Yeah, at least.
I guess, yeah, I should knock on wood. So as always, hit us up. I'm Dave Sandell on Instagram and I suppose Twitter, though I got to admit, I'm never on there. Caleb is Caleb Gardner. And we would love to engage with you about your favorite records for starting a bar fight. If you have any suggestions for future topics, we are always, we love getting those. And we like doing our homework and deciding what is objectively the best record that no one will ever have a different opinion about. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next week for Becoming a Swiftie.